we don't even understand this in our own language and culture until you start examining it from the outside in, that language and culture are so intricately connected that you really can't learn one without the other. And so for just to translate words, you might completely miss the meaning.
This episode of the Missions Podcast is sponsored by Reformation Heritage Books, publisher of How to Lead Your Family by Dr. Joel Beakey, a concise, practical guide to biblical leadership in the home. Use the code LEADABWE, all caps, at rhb.org to get 20% off now through September 30th. Greetings and welcome to the Missions Podcast, the show that explores your hard questions on missions, theology, and practice to help goers think and thinkers go. I'm Alex Kochman, Director of Communications and Engagement with ABWE, joined by Scott Dunford, pastor of Western Hills Church in San Mateo, California, on another exhilarating expedition through the winding valleys of missions and culture. And I'm looking, Scott, for a new way to introduce what we're doing each week. So I think we've talked about spelunking, we've talked about expeditions. So that's my new thing. I'm going to try to find something new to say there on each introduction. But, you know, it can be a little bit challenging coming into this, whether you're a new first-time listener, whether you have been following with us for years. We've got quite the backlog of episodes. And of course, you can find more podcast content at missionspodcast.com. We also appreciate those of you who've left us a positive rating and review. Please drop us one of those. I know every podcast, every show wants you to subscribe, wants you to leave a review, wants you to leave a thumbs up. But doing that will help other people discover the content. And so we appreciate those of you who've taken that step. But Scott, starting this conversation can be a little bit challenging. We were talking about this just briefly before we hit record. You know, a lot of us have been in a very different headspace with very heavy things that have happened in this nation over the past couple of weeks. Of course, just a few days ago, we released an exclusive episode talking about what is at this time of recording last week's tragedy that has shaken the nation. But, you know, when we're living headline to headline, we notice the short events that flare up, that happen, that affect the psyche of our culture. And we forget to notice some of the slower trends that are constantly happening in the background that also have generational effects. And one of the trends that's been affecting the missions world and the church in crucial ways is AI. It's not all at once. It's been gradual over the last few years, but it is exploding, continuing to explode on the scene. And Scott, even recently as this week, some new announcements from Apple have, believe it or not, some implications for missionaries.
Yeah, I mean, listen to this. The AirPod Pro 3 just came out, and this is the explanation of it. With live translation powered by Apple Intelligence, you can listen to people speaking in different languages and hear translations through your iPod Pro 3 to respond, to speak naturally, and your words will appear in the other person's language on your iPhone screen. To make the experience even more magical, if you both have AirPods Pro 3, you can each speak in your own language and hear translations through your AirPods. I mean, that's like sci-fi stuff, right? And you can imagine that all over the country, short-term mission trip teams are all getting excited about getting the new iPod. Maybe that can be part of the fundraising thing. The new iPod Pro 3. AirPod Pro 3. It's hard to say.
AirPod, AirBud, you know, who knows with all of these pods and buds.
But you can imagine everyone getting excited of, hey, we can go to Hungary now and just listen through our headphones and we're all going to be just great. Which in one level, that's pretty awesome. You know, like if I'm going to go on a cruise or something, or I'm going to go on a vacation, I think that'd be super helpful to have. But for missions, our good friend Matt Bennett just put on X the other day of like some big question marks, like, hey, this isn't the game changer that missionaries should think it is. And we're going to kind of dive into why not.
Yeah, Scott, I want your take on why not. You know, if you're new to the show, Scott has been the missionary here. I'm more of the local church guy. Of course, Scott is that as well. But you had to do some serious language learning when you were getting ready to head to Asia. And that language learning process for an English speaker, for a native English speaker, I mean, I got to imagine there was no comparable, you know, it's one thing when you're going from, you know, for instance, one Romance language into another. When you're going from English to Chinese, that's just there's no easy parallels, right? What was that journey like for you? And why would you say, and why would our friend of the show, Matt Bennett, say that this isn't a silver bullet?
Because I think of the unique way that we don't even understand this in our own language and culture until you start examining it from the outside in, that language and culture are so intricately connected that you really can't learn one without the other. And so for just to translate words, you might completely miss the meaning. I mean, we can see that in scripture. I mean, if I had more time to think about it, I could think of several examples where the direct translation doesn't necessarily fully communicate what the text is saying.
I'll tell you, I can give you an example just even from my devotions very recently. I've been in the Psalms, and don't ask me which psalm it is, but there's one where David's praying about his enemies, and you know, he says, they're afflicting me, they're doing this, they're doing that to me, but as for me, I give myself to prayer. And I hadn't looked at it before, but I noticed there's a footnote in the ESV. And I'm like, oh, I wonder. And I look down and I see that in the Hebrew originally, it says, but I am prayer. And I started to think that, you know, sometimes you can almost think like, oh, yeah, I can see how in that culture, in that language, that turn of phrase might make more sense. That one stumped me. I don't know why, if you're a Hebrew speaker, you would ever say, I am prayer. Those are the sorts of things maybe you're talking about.
Well, yeah, here's an example in Mandarin. You know, I would notice people saying to me, how trilema, or how trilema, and that would just mean like, have you eaten or not, you know? And I would try to give an explanation like, oh, not yet. We're going to go eat soon, or we're going to go upstairs and eat. And then later I'm learning that, like, actually that wasn't a phrase of real question. It's like kind of like saying, what's up? And a foreign language learner going, the roof, the sky. I don't know how to answer that question. But in Chinese history, like in recent history, when they had gone through the revolution, there was famine and a lot of people hadn't eaten. And so a good way to say to someone, are you okay? Or how are you doing? Is to ask them if they've eaten or not. And it was just a greeting. It was not a question about my meal or what my wife was making or whether we were going to go out to eat that day. It was simply a question of how are you doing? And that's a very small example, but it gives the idea of like how important and how tied in language and culture go.
Yeah, no, I think about even in central Pennsylvania here, to give kind of a pedestrian example, but I noticed many years ago that in this area, if somebody asks you what you're doing this weekend, you know, in some places that would be, oh, maybe they're going to invite me to spend some time with them this weekend. Nope, not here. What are you up to this weekend?
Right.
Not much. You? Nothing. And that's the end of the conversation. And so it's not even just that the phrase itself encodes something else. So with that example from Mandarin that you're describing, you know, that phrase is encoding just how are you doing today? But even in this case too, there's how you're using that phrase in other senses. The meaning is indifferent, but it's also what purpose that phrase is playing in the dialogue dance that's happening. All of that is tied up with culture.
Right. I heard another example in the Philippines where someone was asking a group of young men to come play basketball with them. They'd say, yes, I'm going to go. I'll come play basketball with you on Saturday. And they'd show up on Saturday and there'd be no one there. And after several attempts like this, the guy got really frustrated. Like, these guys are saying, he's accusing them of lying, right? Because in our culture, you ask a direct question, get a direct answer, that's a lie, right? But a friend was able to explain to him, like, they didn't tell you they were coming. I knew they weren't coming. Why are you surprised they're coming? And it turned out like he just wasn't able to understand the cultural cues. They were communicating clearly in a polite way that they weren't going to come play basketball, even though their words said they were. And a culture, someone who's living in a culture who understands the language better, who understands the cultural signs better, could clearly tell that they were not coming. And they were telling you very politely that they weren't coming. But words alone, Apple AirPod Pros wouldn't be enough to communicate. And I think that kind of gets us into that deeper question of like, if language and culture are that important to understand some basic little, you know, little things, how much more important would it be to communicate something very big, like the gospel and guilt and shame and all of these things that come along with your relationship with God? How much deeper your understanding of the language would have to be to make sure that you don't screw that up?
You know, culture is everything. Culture isn't just what you're saying. It's even where you're saying it, to whom you're saying it. All of that context matters. I heard a discussion recently with an individual from the UK who had, who had spent a significant amount of time in Japan. And many of us who are familiar with Japanese culture, you know the insane working hours and the long, long days that people, especially in those urban centers, are putting in. Part of that is because the white collar culture in Japan is that there's sort of polite surface level speech, which we would say is fairly dishonest. It's all company line level communication that happens during those basic work hours, you know, 9 to 5 or 9 to 6. You're not actually going to hear the truth from your coworkers until after 6 or 7 or 8 p.m. So part of the reason they're all going out to dinner afterwards, spending more time with each other, is because that's where the real conversation finally happens. And I think some of us, even in the States, have seen those sorts of dynamics at a much lesser level. And so I think we can appreciate how language and culture are all tied together, Scott. But maybe the objection would be this, though. The objection is, look, our job is to understand the culture, yes, but ultimately to communicate the gospel. Sure, I might not get all of the nuances of a particular culture's way of thinking, but this tool would allow me to essentially walk up to anyone, as long as they're speaking a known language and not an obscure, untranslated tribal language, or maybe at least walk up to anyone who is literate, who can read words on a screen or interact back and forth in that way, and present the facts of the death, burial, resurrection, and the call to response, the gospel facts of Jesus Christ. How is that missing the mark? Are we thinking too narrowly about missions if we're thinking primarily about application in that kind of a cold contact evangelistic encounter?
I think you and I have talked about this a lot, and of course others have too, but it bears repeating, because there are people, probably this is the only time they'll ever listen to this show. We know we have people that drop in on one episode, often for the worst.
Yeah, we know who you are.
well, they won't be listening to this one. The key doctrinal components of the gospel require careful explanation, and they require levels of understanding, you know, to put that into like a practical concept. I mean, if you invite someone to follow Jesus Christ as their Lord and their God, is that a problem in a Hindu or Buddhist context? Not at all. That's a very easy thing to do. Sure. I'm very happy to call Jesus Christ my Lord. Does that mean that they're saved? Not in any way. You know, because the fundamental concept of what it means to have someone be their Lord and be their God and even give worship to a deity is very flexible in Hindu culture. Mm. Like, it is no problem at all to add Jesus and Krishna. In fact, Jesus and Krishna are both part of the same thing. And so they have no problem with that. And so how would you know that? How would you know that? Well, only if you know the language and the culture, right? How do you know which word for God to use in the Chinese context? How do you know in, you know, we've talked about this just recently, like in the Muslim context, if it's okay to use, when it's okay to use Allah and when it's not okay to use Allah? Is it ever okay to use the Arabic term for Jesus, Isa? You know, all of those kind of those things are not just tied to a language, because you could look in a dictionary or a you know, a direct translation and go, Isa equals Jesus. But when you get into the culture behind the scenes, you realize, well, in certain settings, Isa could mean a lot of things that aren't the biblical Jesus. Just like maybe in our culture, when you're talking to Mormons, you have to do more explanation when they say, I'm a Christian. I'm a follower of Jesus. I believe in Jesus Christ as my Lord and Savior. But does that all they mean by that?
I want to ask you a question about to get a little bit anthropological, but there's something called the Sapir Whorf hypothesis. You're familiar with it, I'm sure. Maybe a few of our fellow nerdy missiologist listeners might be familiar with this hypothesis or idea, being that if a culture lacks a word for something, then they also tend to lack the mental concept for that. Is that how language works? Think about that for a second while you mull over your answer, Scott. First, we just want to give a shout out to our sponsors, Reformation Heritage Books. If you are a Christian man who, like me, knows how much you fall short, I know I need to be a better husband, a better father. Just ask my wife and kids. I'm sure that if you get them honest enough, they see it as well. And if you want to grow in that way, in How to Lead Your Family, Dr. Joel Beakey offers biblical and practical advice for leading your home in a way that's modeled after Christ as the ultimate prophet, priest, and king. Drawing from his decades of pastoral and family life experience, this short little read, which I'm holding here in my hands, and this is a great, by the way, pocket size. This can go with you. We actually have about 50 copies of these that we're giving out in our church, so very excited for it. But it's packed with wisdom and encouragement to help men lead with conviction and grace. So, Missions Podcast listeners, you can go to rhb.org to get this little volume. Use the code LEAD, A-B-W-E, all caps, no spaces, LEAD, A-B-W-E, all caps, and you'll get 20% off this already affordable little book. And new customers, once you order, you'll also get a coupon back with 10% off by email after you create an account. This offer ends very soon, September 30th. This month is careening rapidly towards an end, if you can believe it. So make sure you take advantage of that new helpful resource from Dr. Joel Beakey. So Scott, what do you think about this idea that concepts themselves are tied inextricably to the words themselves? I've heard anecdotes of studies that have been done with remote tribes, for instance, that lacked the word for blue. And so you show them things that are blue, and they can only describe it as shades of green or shades of purple, you know, whatever's in between green and purple. Is that part of what we're talking about here? Is not only the fact that theological concepts need unpacking, but you have to teach the concept sometimes by giving them new words altogether. Christianese is not only, you know, unavoidable, I think, sometimes when we're discussing theology, but it's also necessary to teach concepts that there might not be any other word for, right? I might just have to teach you the word atonement, or I might just have to teach you what crucifixion is if you're not culturally familiar with that. How do we disentangle those things, Scott?
Yeah, I mean, I think that an obvious, you know, example that, you know, you added a few, but when we're talking, when you ask a new believer or someone who's not a believer to read the book of John or book of Matthew with you, and immediately they're coming across concepts and cultural pictures that make zero sense, right? So to us, the Lamb of God, which takes away the sin of the world, it sounds like complete nonsense to someone without that kind of, I mean, you think about it from a complete unbeliever's perspective. There's this lamb that kind of trots into your life and somehow takes away your sin. Like, that's bizarre, you know, unless you're unpacking this whole Old Testament, theology and imagination of a lamb, a sacrifice. So immediately we hear it. Immediately the Bible, the people of Jesus' time would have heard it and immediately known what was being talked about, even though it was still kind of scandalous that there's a Lamb of God, not just a Lamb of Israel. But we understand it. Well, how do we know that? Well, it's because we were trained in that. And so I think understanding what, and if we don't think and don't know the culture of the people we're dealing with, we'll make assumptions like that all the time. And just most people, when they're listening to something that they don't understand, they don't want to look stupid by like raising their hand every 10 seconds saying, I don't understand. Can you explain that? They just let it go and they move on with their life, or they just ignore that part of the teaching, which may have been the most important part of the teaching. And so I think it's really important that when we're teaching in another culture and context, whether that's in America, which, you know, like I'm in a very multicultural place. My church is very multicultural, multi-ethnic, or when we go overseas, that we do that hard work of trying to understand where they're coming from, and then even kind of do reverse understanding of where we're coming from and what assumptions we're making, so that we can speak not just with proper diction and grammar and vocabulary, but that we're speaking in a way that is encoding and decoding the message properly. Mm. We want the gospel to be clear. That takes work.
And part of why we're talking about this is not just because there's a new announcement from Apple about a cool new gadget, but there is a strong undercurrent in mainstream evangelical missions right now that wants to downplay language learning, which if I told that to just the average congregant in my church, they would probably react and say, what are you talking about? Of course, if you're a missionary, you have to learn language. But there are there's this idea that you can so hotwire a people group movement in your setting that you can quickly dip in and out of a context, out of a tribe, and rely so much upon local seekers, local persons of peace, that you scarcely have to be versed in the language, much less yourself preaching, teaching, involved in a direct proclamational role in advancing the gospel. And look, sometimes there are extraordinary movements that pop up from time to time and place to place. But I'm really concerned about this reductionistic idea of missions that de-emphasizes core things. You know, look at how long God, so you talked about the Old Testament, Scott, and the way that it provides this plausibility structure for statements like, behold, the Lamb of God who takes away the sin of the world. Well, how long did God spend establishing a foundation of a language and a culture and a system of symbols and mental images to make sense of his son stepping into human history? Well, he spent over 1,500 years establishing that whole framework, right? Depending how much you want to include in your analysis of that. And so if language and culture are that important to God in bringing his son into this world, they need to be important to missionaries as well. We can't, when we send long-term workers, we can't allow them to skip language and culture acquisition. So, you know, there's no Apple AirPods 3 for understanding the culture and the value system and the way of thinking of another people. You can't microwave that. You can't reduce that to something that an AI can handle. Now, you could get some culture tips from your large language model, but certainly not in a way that's going to affect the way that you think and the way that you feel about the people surrounding you. Scott, so what does cultural literacy look like to you coming from a missionary perspective? And how should people think about becoming more culturally literate if they've been sent to serve in a faraway place, or if they're just trying to exegete and understand their own local context?
I want to say some of this for our overtime episode, if you don't mind. But I do think just broadly, you know, speaking, I mean, let me push it back to an example from something you've done recently. So you have another show called At the Worldview with Alex Kochman. I think I got that right. And I noticed, like, when you talk, you're using certain insider language, right? I don't mean insider movement language, but like you'll say things like, you know, white pill. And I'm like, okay, I'm over here on my phone, like looking up, like, what does white pill mean? You know, you're like, vibe shift. Okay, what, look, oh, vibrations. Like, I'm sure there's some boomer out there be like, oh, the Beach Boys. He loves the Beach Boys. This is a new Beach Boys song. You're like, no. You know, like, and you're using this insider language, and someone might go, that's a dumb thing to do. You shouldn't be using insider language. You should speak to, like, all generations, not just, you know, the Gen Z, you know, young millennial group that Alex is speaking to in that show. But there's a reason that what is the reason you use that kind of language? I have my theory as to why you use that kind of language. I want to hear your explanation though.
Yeah, no, that's a good example. I am intentionally code shifting to reach very online pastors, church leaders, but also people that are engaged in culture, engaged politically. But there's a certain online lingo, especially on the cultural and political right. Some of that language, those are all very specific terms. You gave a few examples of them.
And I do this sometimes when I'm teaching, like if I'm preaching, my congregation is mostly older people. So I tend to use more older illustrations, you know, like I was connecting something, with foolishness, and they use the illustration of Pinocchio, right? Cause that generation has watched that Pinocchio and they remember the foolishness, you know, of Pinocchio getting suckered in, you know, by honest Bill or honest Bob. Or Honest John, that's right. Honest John. And
you had it.
I had it. Gets them all suckered in, you know, and everyone can go, oh yeah, I remember that show. When I'm speaking to college students, I might use a different reference. I might use something from like the anime One Piece, you know, and a character that they might have, because that's a very popular show amongst young people, that they will lean in when they hear something that, oh, I know that. It's a reference point, right? I think the same thing is happening when you're using terminology. You're relating to them that I understand where you're coming from and I understand where you're at, and I'm using language that causes them to lean in. And the same thing can be true, I think, culturally. Like when we are using language properly, when we're showing a depth of understanding of their culture, it gives a better representation of ourselves and our intellect, and we're engaging with the things that they're thinking about or that are substantial to them, and then showing how the gospel plays into those very real questions that they have. So I think a few things that I would add, you know, as we talk about like culture, and I think we can get into this more in depth in the overtime, is like knowing history. Like for me, not knowing like how Churlama, like, you know, that doesn't matter that much, but the more I understood the history of like that phrase, it makes sense. You know, like why does someone say bless you? Is it because they're all Christians? When you sneeze, do they all say bless you because they're all Christians? Well, no, but it comes out of a historical context that you can say, okay, this is not a Christian thing necessarily. This is a little more superstitious, or God be with you doesn't mean that they're really wishing God's blessing upon you by saying goodbye, even though that's the etymology of the word. I think the same thing can be true as we're communicating the gospel, like understanding history, understanding development of language, understanding culture and cultural events and politics and pop cultural things that are happening at that moment, deeper pop cultural currents that are going on, you know, within the nation. What's unique to that city? You know, I think we see that with Paul. Like he's very tuned in when he's writing letters to these churches of what's going on in their community that's affecting them. Like, you can't understand 1 Corinthians without deeply understanding the culture of Corinth and what Paul's that church is wrestling with and how it's affecting them. Same thing as he's teaching in Athens, or we could go on and on talking about like his ability to understand the language and the culture became really important and pivotal to his gospel proclamation and the church planting work that had to happen. Mm.
There's no silver bullets. We need those who are committed to the long, hard work of language learning, of culture learning, which we'll discuss a little bit more in our bonus episode, our overtime show, which you can get in your Apple Podcasts app by subscribing for $9.99 per month or $99, I believe it is. Maybe it's $100 per year, but you can get an extra discount there, 2 months off when you purchase a whole year up front. Or you can go to our website, missionspodcast.com/premium, to get access to that. And when you join through the website, there's additional perks as well, including access to our private group chat. We'd love to invite you into this community. You'll also even get a free Missions Podcast mug. So go ahead, sign up today, and let's continue the conversation over there. But the Missions Podcast is a ministry of ABWE, which has more than 1,000 missionaries, Scott, can you believe it, reaching into 91 countries and counting. And if you are someone who's looking to take your next steps in the Great Commission, go to abwe.org/go. And to get more content from this show, go to missionspodcast.com. Remember again to leave a positive rating and review in your platform of choice and subscribe for more content. New episodes drop each Sunday night at 7 p.m. Until our next show, go make disciples of all the nations.